Welcome in, Hokies fans, to this edition of the Tech Sideline podcast as we record on Monday, October 4th. Virginia Tech coming off a bye week. So on episode 196, we're going to look at where the ACC stands in the football standings through about half of the season, see where the Atlantic and the Coastal stand and who's in contention to get to the ACC championship in December. We're also going to look at a huge commitment for Virginia Tech basketball. Rodney Rice, a top 100 player in the country, commits to Virginia Tech yesterday. We'll also check on the state of the men's and women's soccer program as they have been great early on in the season. All of that and more coming up on episode 196 of the Tech Sideline podcast, which starts right now. We welcome you into episode 196 of the Tech Sideline podcast. Whether you're listening archived on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts, or if you're watching archived on the YouTube, we ask you to like, comment, and subscribe to the Tech Sideline YouTube channel. If you are watching live on YouTube, be sure to drop a comment or question in the chat below for Will and Chris, and we will get to those later on in the show. We welcome you in to episode 196 of the Tech Sideline podcast, as always brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. You can help bring Olympic hopeful athletes to Blacksburg and one of the best and fastest growing wrestling programs in the country. Go to southeastrtc.com to learn more and donate today. We got the usual crew on set on this Monday morning. Will Stewart, our founder and general manager across the way. Chris Coleman, the lead analyst and columnist at techsideline.com to my left. Behind the scenes, the best podcast producer in the land, Malcolm Stewart. And in the fourth chair today, it is Nick Brown. He is going to have his usual trivia and notes segment right before our break, and I'll also get to your YouTube questions at the end of the show. And I am Jake Lyman, your host, as always. Bye week, guys. So not much going on this weekend. What'd you guys get up to?
Slept in on Saturday and then watched a little bit of football. Watched Syracuse, Florida State, and then I watched Boston College, Clemson Saturday night.
How close did you watch Syracuse and Florida State?
Fairly close. Yeah. I didn't watch the whole game, but I tuned in like the second quarter.
Yeah.
So I didn't flip back and forth between it and anything else. I watched that game.
It was a decent game.
It was a really good game. At one point, there were two consecutive missed PATs.
Extra points, yeah.
Yeah. And one of which, like the Syracuse kicker, apparently won the Lou Groza Award a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah, and then he missed an extra. That's like the most go ACC moment of the weekend, I guess. I felt bad for Syracuse to a certain extent. There was a blatant hold on Florida State's last drive when their quarterback scrambled down the left side
that
didn't get called. Oh, man.
Q Hokey Pro on the message boards.
So. Yeah. I don't know. It was an entertaining game, but I really watched it more out of curiosity to see what I thought of Florida State. Why are they 0-4? And I don't know. I mean, the recruiting rankings say that they certainly have more talent than Syracuse. But like when you watch them play against each other, you couldn't tell a difference between either team.
Right.
You could tell no difference between either team.
Yeah.
Sometimes talent, you can't tell that it's actual talent unless it's well coached. The culture is strong. Guys know what they're doing, things like that. And apparently not a lot of that has been happening at Florida State recently.
Mm.
I was hoping, obviously hope you never pull for Florida State over Syracuse. So I was hoping Syracuse could pull out the win, but
you had me at you never pull for Florida State.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Stop right there.
You know, I'd pull for them against Carolina.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We were talking on the podcast on Wednesday about the Miami UVA game on Thursday and how the smart call was to pull for Virginia to win that game, which they ended up doing.
The end of that game was nuts. Like, Virginia was fortunate to win. If Miami had won, they would have been fortunate to win.
Yeah.
Miami had the ball. So they do a little running play to the left with the quarterback to get the ball in the middle of the field for the last second field goal. When he fell down, there were 40 seconds left on the clock, right? 40 seconds left on the clock. You have plenty of time to run your kicker out on the field and
set up, and keep him in rhythm.
Just keep it just normal, a normal kick. Instead, you let the clock run down to 3 seconds and ice your own kicker.
Now, do you know if UVA had any timeouts?
UVA had no timeouts left.
Right. So
yeah. So I mean, the only way the clock could stop is if Miami stopped it. And they stopped it.
See, I blame that on Manny not going to bed early at the ACC.
I mean, seriously. There are other things Miami football coaches have to do than think about managing games, I guess.
That was a strange game, though. I mean, the UVA touchdown that should have probably been an interception, and then the receiver for UVA kind of just stood up with the ball, didn't even know he caught it.
Did you read any of his quotes? He didn't realize it was a touchdown. Yeah. He thought the ball had bounced off the ground or whatever, so it lands in his chest, and he grabs it, and he gets up, and people come running over.
He wasn't celebrating.
He scored.
Yeah.
He's like, I did?
It was odd. Now, to be fair to Virginia, I mean, that Miami guy late in the game should have been called for a targeting. That was like the most Miami play. I mean, you've got to stop. It's third and long. You force an incomplete pass, and then you just come in and helmet, you know, lead with a crown of the helmet. That is the most Miami football play.
Undisciplined.
Undisciplined. There was no reason for it. And it was the intent was there to see. I mean, it was clearly intent. Sometimes those targeting plays, I guess you technically can't tell whether it's intentional or not, but so you have to call them all the same. But that one by the Miami player, that was just clear. So that's the reason for the targeting rule in general. He was trying to hurt that guy. So, and as the announcer pointed out, he's lucky he didn't break his own neck.
Yep.
So I think in general, and tell me in the college football, you guys have watched if you agree with this. I think they're being a little less strict with the targeting this year. Yeah. I've seen things that I thought were going to be verified or confirmed as targeting that have not been. Has that been your experience watching?
I think so. I don't know. I don't have an opinion on that. I still think they're really, really soft with late hits on the quarterback.
Yeah.
Where you barely brush a guy.
Some of that.
You're going up. You're a defensive end. You're trained. You're coming in on the quarterback. Get your hands up, because if he throws it over your head to bat it down. So you're still moving forward with your hands up. Yes, sometimes your forearm's going to brush his face mask. That's part of the game. And they're giving him 15 yards every time for that. You saw that in an NFL game yesterday.
There was a lot of bad ones in the NFL yesterday.
So I did see one play in a college game. I can't remember which game it was because I was doing some stuff and going back and forth. But there was a play where a quarterback was scrambling and he got to the sideline, and it reminded me of Michael Vick in 1999. And a defender had a line on him and could have knocked him out of bounds, but he held up.
What game was that?
I can't remember which one. It may have been Florida State.
I think it was. I think it was on that last drive.
So it turned into like a 20 or 30 yard game because the defender laid off of him, thinking if I hit him, they're going to throw a flag.
Right, right.
Because
we're near the sideline and it's the quarterback.
So I was thinking, man, if a Tech player did that, Tech fans would be so livid. And I would have to explain, no, the rules have gotten into defenders' heads.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only reason I could think of why that guy pulled up. You could just see it. Now, I did see another play. UNC had a kickoff return for a touchdown. And I don't like to compliment UNC, but this was a really smart play where a UNC blocker, you know, the returner's running down the sideline with a guy chasing him, and a UNC blocker came up, and instead of blasting the guy from the side, he just kind of ran up to him and shrugged him out of bounds and then went like this, you know. And that was smart, you know. So it's possible in some of the targeting that I've seen overturned, it actually was a hit with the shoulder. It was not the head.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And so it's possible that this
the one
stuff
in the Middle
is,
Tennessee game that knocked out Burmeister.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was with the shoulder.
Yeah, you know, and so I think the rules changes and the enforcement of it are starting to get into the defenders' heads. And, you know, I can't explain the hands being up rushing the quarterback. That's still happening.
What I'm afraid is going to happen in an NFL game one day is it's going to be like a really, really big game. And it's going to be like in the fourth quarter. And the ref's going to call one of those things on some defensive end. And the defensive end is actually going to hit the ref. Was gonna hit her. No, I'm serious.
It's like, possible.
Like football players are angry on the field. They have to be good. And when emotions are high, you're in the NFC Championship game or something like that, and there's 3 minutes left, and one of those calls gets made, and it gives Tom Brady a first down.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it's gonna happen one day.
The one yesterday, and I'm sure we have a lot of Washington football team fans listening to the podcast. where Chase Young kind of brushed Matt Ryan's helmet as he ran by. Yeah. And it was fourth down, would have ended the game, and instead Atlanta got a first down.
That's ridiculous. Like, you go out there for 60 minutes and play the most, you know, physical, brutal sport that you can possibly play, and then you lose the game because of that, where you accidentally barely brush a guy as you're running by him. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. Like, that rule within the context of the sport doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah. And looking at the targeting rules just quickly, I think Justin Fuente actually has had a really good point on this. They need to institute like a flagrant one, flagrant two kind of thing, because I don't know if every one of those hits deserves an ejection. Mm-hmm. I think
that's fair.
I think 15-yard penalty on all of them, but maybe you can step
it up. About it. You can punch someone in the face twice,
right,
and then you're ejected.
Right.
But if you accidentally hit someone in the head, then...
Or if you punch somebody in the face... An hour and 31 minutes. You mean
twice on two separate occasions, right?
It would take, honestly, if it were me, it would take me a lot to eject someone. Like, I would have ejected the Miami guy against UVA.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was clear intention to injure. But most of them, I wouldn't. I mean, yes, you lead with the helmet and everything, but I mean, if you got your head down and if that offensive player makes a move at the last second and you had gone in for the tackle. And then he moves in your direction, and then it becomes helmet to helmet. Like, how can you eject somebody for that?
Yeah, and I got to figure that a large number of refs, it would be interesting to see the percentage, played football. They've played the game. You know, it's not like you're bringing in 5'3" bespectacled guys out to be jerks. You know, these guys, they get it, and especially at the NFL and college level, they've been around the game a long time. They know how it works. So I don't know. I guess they're being told how to officiate.
Well, I imagine most of them don't like calling it.
Yeah.
Right.
I believe I saw yesterday at some point one of the refs in an NFL game called one of those roughing the passer calls and then went over to the sideline and talked to the defensive end and was like, it's the rule. I don't like it, but you have to call it. You got to enforce the rules.
All right. Well, so you didn't ask me what I did this weekend. So Friday night, I put a new stereo in the cop car. Have we talked about the fact that I bought an old cop car?
I know we have off. I'm not sure if we talked about it on the podcast.
Yes, I bought a 2006 Crown Vic cop car, and I've gradually been, you know, it's my project car, so I've gradually been doing stuff to it. And cop cars come with AM/FM radios with four presets. Like, you know, when you pull that thing out of the dash, it's this thick. There's nothing to it. So I put a modern stereo in it. Very cool. That was Friday night. And then Saturday, I painted my basement stairwell, but I had games on, so I was sort of listening. But I wasn't really watching most of the time. So if I say something a little off the wall, it's just because I heard stuff and didn't see stuff. I had Cincinnati and Notre Dame on. Yeah. The tendency is going to be to talk about Notre Dame a lot today, but that's...
We want to save most of that for Wednesday.
Yeah. And, you know, I switched back and forth a little bit. The noon games were awful. They were all blowouts, you know, except for... Cincinnati and Notre Dame started at 2:30, so that at least was a competitive game, but... But when you're painting the stairwell and it's 35-0 midway through the second quarter, it's just nothing to do but paint.
Yeah, not a ton of good games on Saturday, even though some of them were billed to be. I mean, 2 versus 8, 1 versus 12. But Alabama and Georgia, we were talking about this earlier, that they just seem that much better than everybody else.
I mean, when we get to the playoffs and the number 1 and number 2 seed just hammer the number 3 and 4 seeds by 40 or 30 or whatever it's going to be. I mean, people talk about, like, you know, a certain level of college football is separated from everybody else. Well, now, this year, it honestly looks like a certain level has separated from that level.
Yeah.
Like, Georgia and Alabama just look so much better than everybody else to me.
Yeah.
Like, they would just literally flatten anybody. Georgia's defense might be the best defense I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, you look at the rankings right now, it's Alabama, Georgia at the top, and then Iowa, Penn State, Cincinnati. It doesn't feel like those three teams are even in the same atmosphere.
I could not imagine either one of those three teams who, you know, are all good, well-coached teams. I couldn't imagine them being within 25 or 30 points of Alabama or Georgia at the end of the game.
I know it's a different year, and last year was COVID, yada, 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 but Cincinnati played Georgia tough in the bowl game last year. Of course, it's a bowl game. It wasn't a playoff game. So you got to wonder what Georgia's level of motivation was. But I remember watching that game, and that was a hard-fought game. And I was really impressed with Cincinnati.
They had a chance to win that game, too.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
Well, I doubt Georgia cared.
Yeah.
So I mean, well, you get to a point if you're Georgia and Alabama. I mean, the only games you care about are the regular season games that get you to the playoffs and the playoffs. Yeah. Anything below a playoff game is a failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's no point in playing.
And they'll care about the SEC championship game, but that is the way things are written right now. It's not a gateway to the playoffs.
Well, it's not.
It seems like if Alabama and Georgia continue winning, whether you win or lose that game, you're going to be in.
It's the most meaningless SEC championship game ever. You're going to be in the playoffs either way.
They're going to play each other, and then they're both going to the playoffs.
It's just who's going to be number one and who's going to be number two. That's all it's going to decide. Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to it'll decide who your first-round playoff matchup is against. And which quite frankly, won't matter. So,
well, what if Georgia wins the SEC championship game and then Alabama beats them in the national championship game? Who's the national champion then?
Well, you know how it works. It's a
playoff. Whoever wins second, you know? I don't know. Ohio State's going to be there more years than not. I know they're not this year. And I'm sure they'll be better by the end of the season. I mean, they might win out.
And if your only loss is to Oregon, maybe that sneaks you in if you're the Big Ten champion.
Right. I would actually feel better about the playoffs being halfway competitive if there was Ohio State in there. But still, this year, even I don't think they would do much against Alabama or Georgia.
So totally random, different subject change, but I do want to do some housekeeping and give somebody a shout-out who's helped us with our video setup. Malcolm?
I vegged out. What was his name that helped with the video setup?
Corey Rutledge. So Corey is he lives in Richmond and he's in audio video production. It's what he does. So when I told the story about we've got a new switcher and we can't figure it out, Corey hit me up with an email and it's funny I can remember where he lives and works and all that stuff. But anyway, he emailed and he's familiar with the switcher that we bought and. Yeah, he got right to the heart of the matter. So we actually have four cameras set up, and we'll continue evolving that stuff. So sorry to totally change the topic, but I did want to give Corey a shout-out.
Well, on Wednesday, we got the new mics in. Now the switcher's in, so we're starting to get fully high-tech here in the high-tech studios.
We are evolving, yes.
Well, it is Notre Dame week for Virginia Tech football, and Notre Dame coming off a loss to Cincinnati. And we will talk football later on in the show. We're going to dive into the ACC, look at the Atlantic, the Coastal, kind of see where those divisions are shaking out and who is in contention. But first, we got to go with the big news of the weekend. Yesterday, Rodney Rice committed to Virginia Tech basketball, going to DeMatha Catholic. That's where Mike Jones used to be the head coach. 52nd ranked player in the nation by 247, third ranked player in Maryland. This is a huge pickup for the Hokies.
Yeah, one of Tech's highest-ranked recruits ever. You know, not quite as high as Nikhil Alexander Walker or Dorian Finney-Smith, but you know, he's up there.
And back in the day, probably not as high as Dell Curry. Dell was
Dell was a McDonald's All-American.
Way back then, yeah.
Yeah, so Dell would have been, you know, top 20 or so in the country by today's, by modern. He also would not have gone to Fort Defiance High School.
He would have
played at a basketball factory if he was a recruit right now, and literally everybody in the whole country would offer him. But anyway.
It's true. Kind of sad, but true.
No more sorry for it, Defiance.
So anyway, in the 247 rankings era, yes, he's the third highest guy between Dorian Finney-Smith. And
yes.
I couldn't. So I saw that GC Hokie 34 said that, third highest rated recruit ever. He didn't list the other two, and I thought, well, Nikhil's one of them. Who's the other? Kind of forgot about Dorian Finney-Smith.
Both currently NBA players and pretty solid, at least rotational NBA players as well.
And Rice has NBA potential. He can play the one or the two. And the thing is, like his primary position long term at Tech might be point guard, but you can play him and Pedula together, because you can play Rice at the two.
Yeah, GC Hokie kind of gave us the rundown on the subscriber board yesterday, and he said that Rice is absolutely a point guard. And that was my first thought, was, well, what happens to Sean Padula? But I'll let Mike Young sort that out. You take the best players you can get. And GC also says you'll see Rice listed at 6'4 and 6'5. He says he's got him in the 6'3 range. So I gather from reading the comments that he's not a particularly lengthy ball player, defender, long arms, or anything like that, but he's very physical, and you can't knock him off his line. When he goes to the rack, you're not going to knock him off his drive, you know. And this is a random comment from way back in the day, but Marquis Cook was like that. He was very physical going to the basket.
That's all he was.
That was all he could. He couldn't use both hands, and he couldn't shoot, and that's why he lasted about.
But he was the Michael Vick of Virginia Tech basketball.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So Anyway, that's
this is before. Marquise Cook was the highest ranked basketball player in the state in 2004-ish, thereabouts. Wow. And he was a freshman when like Jamon Gordon and Xavier Dowdell were sophomores. And it was a heavy recruitment. A lot of major schools recruiting him. He was like a top 50 type guy. And Seth Greenberg sold him on that he could be the Michael Vick of Virginia Tech basketball. And he came in and he was big and strong, just like he was hyped to be. But he stunk at everything else. just could not shoot a lick. Couldn't finish with his left hand. I mean, I think he ended his basketball playing for like Elizabeth City State or something like that.
Well, I remember he transferred to Colorado State.
And then somewhere else.
And again, had a cup of coffee at Colorado State.
He had two or three different schools that he played for. Yeah. Not a good basketball player.
Until he found his level. He moved until he found his level.
I'm not even sure he was good there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think a couple of times he moved, and it wasn't necessarily his decision to move.
Right. It's not his fault he was overrated.
You know? I mean, people can't help how they're ranked.
Yeah.
What other people rank them.
Yeah, exactly. You have no control over that. But
anyway, we hope that's not the case with Rodney
Rice.
Yes.
Well, Rodney Wright, he goes to DeMatha Catholic, which is a known basketball factory. And again, Mike Jones was the head coach there. Now he's one of Virginia Tech's assistant coach. He replaced Chester Frazier this offseason. And that seemed to be kind of the first thought everybody had when Mike Jones took this job was not only are you going to get the DeMatha guys who he had been coaching, but maybe you get that entire DMV, which has been a pretty solid pool of talent over the last couple of years.
I remember when I first wrote an article after Mike Jones got hired. I went over a list of recruits from DeMatha who he would know and have solid connections with. And you know, Rice was one of the guys I mentioned in that article. And you had to figure Tech was going to end up getting at least one of those guys in this class. And, Rice will be the crown jewel, I guess, of this recruiting class from a rankings perspective. GC Hokie says he is primarily a point guard, but also someone with enough positional versatility, length, and defensive potential to play 1-3 depending on matchups. I don't currently see a lineup where you'd have him guard threes, but he can absolutely be a wing. So his primary position would be point guard, secondary, the two guard, and an emergency small ball three.
Right. Okay.
And that seems to be what Virginia Tech needs. When we kind of looked at the team last Wednesday, it seemed like there was a little bit of an issue with depth, especially on the outside, especially at wing. So maybe a guy who can be kind of the tandem with Padula up top, but also be able to go out there and take over for Couture and Aline.
Sure, depending on the matchup and everything like that. He's certainly a guy. I mean, he'll probably... It's interesting because I'm really, really high on Sean Padula.
Yeah.
And he's considered Storm Murphy 2.0.
Yeah.
And Storm Murphy told me that. He said they were just extremely similar players. So Padula is going to get plenty of time, I think, as the backup point guard this year. I don't know exactly how many minutes per game or anything like that, but he's set to take over the starting point guard role as a sophomore next year. And then Rodney Rice will be a freshman that year. So those guys are really close. And that's why you want to get your five best players on the court. And I think Mike Young's system is versatile enough to do that, at least at the one and the two.
Right.
Because it doesn't require a true point guard, so to speak.
The point guard often brings the ball up and then
But someone else initiates the offense, right. So you can play those two guys together with Rodney Rice at the two. And that's not an issue at all.
Yeah.
Well, this class is already looking pretty strong. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about Patrick Wessler, a big center who committed to Virginia Tech. MJ Collins already in the class. It seems like this could be the best class that Mike Young has brought in yet.
Yeah, got to add a power forward to it, I think. And Noah Clowney's really high on the board right now. I hope Alabama doesn't want him because Alabama, whatever Alabama decides to do these days, they do it. Yeah. All right, so you remember earlier in
not
just football. All right, so you remember early in Nick Saban's tenure, when Alabama had a great defense, awesome offensive line, the first running back taken in the draft every year, but their quarterbacks were always game managers, right? And then all of a sudden, Nick Saban decided, oh, you know what? I think I want my quarterbacks to also be the first quarterbacks taken in the draft. So you know, he upgraded his quarterback recruiting. Because he just chose to.
Yep.
Right? And then Alabama, they've got so much money, they decided they wanted to have a top-notch basketball program. And now they have a top-notch basketball program. They just picked up a commitment from the number one point guard in the country the other day. So they just decided they wanted to be awesome at basketball, and now they're going to be awesome at basketball.
It's true. It seems like that program has just exponentially improved in the last 5 years.
So much money.
Makes sense.
Well, so, and you know, I don't want to be that doom and gloom guy, but you can see the SEC basketball conference closing on the ACC because they've got the money for the coaches. They've hired a lot of good coaches in that conference, and
you know. Sometimes I worry that like 20 years from now, major college athletics is going to be a two conference thing.
Yeah.
And like 20 years from now.
We'll see.
If it truly does become all about the look, I know everybody's wants Jim Phillips to find ways to increase ACC revenue.
He's not a magician. Like
he can't help that there's so many teams in this league that are just have small alumni bases. They're small private schools. My God, Wake and Pitt in the ACC title game, that might happen.
Yeah.
And like 3,000 kids go to Wake. You know? Pitt, I have a lot of respect for what Narduzzi's done there. He's done a good job. I think Kenny Pickett's a great player.
I think it's a good football team.
But their fans don't go to games. There's no atmosphere in that stadium. Like the worst case scenario for the SEC would be like even if like Alabama and Georgia and LSU and Florida fell off. Let's say Mississippi State magically won the SEC West, and let's say South Carolina magically won the SEC East. Well, those are still two big state schools that will fill up the Georgia Dome for their championship game.
Right. And Wake Forest and Pitt will not.
Right. Well, there's no depth in the ACC as far as big state schools go.
And with Mississippi State and USC, for example, they might even fill it up more and travel more because, let's say, Alabama and Georgia go – they're going to be like, well, I want to save my money to go to the college football playoff games because they already know they're going.
Right.
Well, that takes us right into where I wanted to go next. We're going to look kind of at the ACC football landscape and just see where everything stands heading into about the halfway point of the overall season, maybe the quarter point of the ACC season. And we'll start with the Atlantic. You mentioned Wake Forest at the top, and they're 5-0, 3-0 in conference. They got a big win over Louisville this weekend, but maybe a little bit tighter than they would have hoped it would be. And then NC State, 1-0, the big win over Clemson. But it does not seem to be Clemson's conference this year. I think maybe there was a hope this week that they would finally break out of that slump, but just, a six-point win over Boston College at home?
They were pretty fortunate that Dennis Grossell can't complete any passes down the field. No, I mean, like, there were multiple times Zay Flowers was behind Clemson.
Well, that's true.
And he just couldn't hit him in stride. He overthrew him. Grossell he's good enough to throw for 520 yards on UVA, but who isn't, right? Their defense is pretty terrible. But that was it was interesting watching that game. Boston College didn't have the quarterback that can complete passes further than 20 yards down the field, if maybe even only 15. Whereas Clemson, their wide receivers struggle to make plays down the field. Now, the Clemson quarterback, he'll overthrow shorter throws. His bad throws come on short throws. Down the field, he's money. He puts it right on target, and it just goes right through their hands. Tim Hasselbeck was calling the game for the ACC Network, and I thought he made a really astute comment. He talked about when you throw the ball downfield in one-on-one coverage, it's called a 50-50 ball. In the past, for Clemson, that's been more like 80-20.
Right.
Like, Trevor Lawrence would throw that ball downfield to Justin Ross or whoever, and he would just simply go up and beat the defender in the air for the football. And You saw them do that back shoulder throw on the 3-yard line that was perfectly thrown, and the receiver just dropped it. And there was another one down the left sideline where it was pretty good coverage, but the ball just went right through the receiver's hands.
Well, and I think a guy they have not had come through for him in the limited time I've watched Clemson is Justin Ross.
Did you see what happened to him the other night?
Well, let's talk about the end of the NC State game. He had two opportunities at the end of that game. I think they were back-to-back. Clemson's last two plays. The first one was a contested ball in the end zone that, if I remember correctly, he got his hands on and didn't come down with it. And then the fourth down play where they threw a bit of a fade to him, I question his effort. I really do. He did. I don't know if he was being held or something, but he just didn't look like he went all out for it, which doesn't make any sense.
He didn't look like he ran his route all the way through.
Yeah. So in addition to just not catching the football, I just something, you know, that team is definitely less than the sum of their parts right now.
Well, I just remember back to Justin Ross when he was playing. It might have been in the national championship game as a true freshman. I watched him, and the first thing I said was, that dude is going to be a top five pick in the NFL one day. You could just see the natural talent, but it doesn't seem like he's developed all that much.
Must have been two back surgeries?
Yeah. Well, he did have the serious injury last year. He missed all of last season.
And you never know, like, with a back injury, just when it's just going to start hurting. Yep.
And they keep those things quiet. They don't talk about it.
I mean, they took him out of the game in the middle of the game the other day. So, it can flare up at any point.
Yeah, I'm friends with Phil Williams, who played basketball for Tech in the 80s. And, you know, so we go way back, like that we met when we were 5 or 6 years old. And Phil was a dominant high school basketball player. And so, if I remember the details, somewhere along the line, he aggravated his back in high school. So at Tech, I remember him telling me, you know, you just, like you just said, you just never knew what your back was going to be like. Mm-hmm. You know, so what happened to Ross the other night?
I don't know. They just took him out of the game, and they didn't say why, but it probably has something to do with the back.
Yeah, okay. All right. So that.
They said hit to the head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, they'll say anything.
Yeah.
They probably don't want to make it seem like it's a serious, like maybe re-injury.
Well, you know,
back.
Michael Brewer always had a back injury at Tech, and they never said anything about it.
Yeah.
Like I always heard, like, at halftime of the Pitt game in 2014, they had to give him a pain shot in his back at halftime.
Yeah.
Because his back was killing him so much in the first half, and then lo and behold, he came out and threw for 150, 200 yards in the second half after he was pain-free. But, yeah, you never know what kind of pain these guys are in, and those back injuries can be particularly nasty.
Well, Clemson's offense, we've talked about how it obviously hasn't been up to par this year, but just look at their three conference games. 54 points for in three conference games. So that's 18 points per game, and seven of those came in overtime against NC State. Mm-hmm. For comparison, Wake Forest has 109 points in three conference games. So it's bad for Clemson's offense right now.
Yeah, and you know, Dabo had been saying they were close, and you know, I had watched some of the NC State game, but I was out talking to friends and half watching it, half talking to other people. But I watched the game by myself the other night, and the good news for Clemson is their running game improved against Boston College, and that's big for them. But the rest of their passing game is, like, honestly, it's not too dissimilar from Virginia Tech's, except with a little more talent, of course. But on one play, it's the quarterback overthrowing a receiver. On the next play, it's a receiver not coming down with a ball. On the next play, it's the offensive line missing a block and there's pressure in the backfield. You know, it's not one thing you can point to and say, oh, that's the problem, and if we fix this, everything's going to magically start
working. Sounds familiar.
You're right. Yeah, it's just, I think there's multiple issues there. Now, that said, you know, Dabo says they're close, and they do look close. Like, if those receivers would catch those balls, then everybody would be saying, they beat Boston College by 20 is what they would have ended up doing probably.
Yeah.
And that would have been a perfectly acceptable result.
So it's interesting. To support your point, I'm sitting here. It's one thing to talk about stats and records and things like that. So what I did, I actually printed out before we came in here, I printed out the PFF grades for the teams in the ACC. So I'm sitting here and I'm looking at a chart. I've got everybody sorted by their overall grade. Mm-hmm. And then, but you can look at all the details. And to your point about receivers, Clemson's receiving group is rated lowest in the ACC
at
56.3. Yep. Now, their overall offense is, let's see.
Oh, look who's next. Look who's next to last. Florida State's next to last in receiving.
In receiving.
Clemson and Florida State, the two teams that recruit the best in the ACC.
And seem to always have those
have
receivers
the best athletes,
everybody
right?
else wanted.
Yeah. Or actually have the worst receiving grades in the entire ACC.
Well, they have the two worst offensive grades in the ACC as well.
Well, excuse me. Wrong line. Yeah, you're right.
Florida State is the worst.
Now, in the
passing. And Miami's third from the bottom.
In terms of Clemson,
Florida State, and Miami are your bottom three teams in receiving in the ACC
and
as far
overall
as rating.
They are the three lowest graded overall teams in the ACC.
Now, when we talk about recruiting better, like, I want to recruit better. I do. But, like, you absolutely have to have the culture to go along with it, man.
Mm-hmm. I would venture that culture is much harder these days than it used to be.
Yes. Yes. I mean, you think about it, man. Watching that Boston College game the other night, and they were without their starting quarterback, Djokovic, who's a really good player, and they certainly win that game with him.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? He's a Notre Dame transfer, and Notre Dame doesn't have a quarterback. They played three quarterbacks against Cincinnati. Two of them threw three interceptions, and the other one was like 9 of 22. Like, they don't have a quarback in South Bend.
Their quarterback is in
Chestnut Hill because he couldn't be patient enough to start to wait one more year to start.
It's tough.
Do you know how hard it is to these days to build that culture where guys want to stay in your program, especially quarterbacks,
man? And especially with NIL now, guys aren't just going to sit on the bench when they could go somewhere else and be the guy and maybe get those endorsement deals.
So let's take our own Jake Lyman here, right? So Jake came in. He's talented. He's a great recruit, but he's got to sit behind Evan Hughes.
Yeah, we redshirted him. And he never hit the transfer portal.
We redshirted, put him on the scout team, which is Tech Talk Live Notes. Yeah, Jack Risner. and he put in the work on the scout team for two or three years?
Yeah, 3 years.
Including the Buzz Williams regime when it was blah, 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 blah.
I almost entered the transfer portal a few times.
But here he is. He's in the big chair, you know, and we're a better organization because of it.
Yeah, I know. And it's, you know, I guess you'd have to ask Djokovic, like, one day, maybe 20 years down the line when he has some perspective. Boston College is a solid football team. They got a really good defense and a good running game.
By the way, the number one overall graded team in the ACC per PFF is Boston College.
Right.
Yep.
But the only thing between Notre Dame and a playoff bid this year is Phil Djokovic.
Well, offensive line.
Even with that, I still think they would. I mean, I think they would run. They would certainly have the potential to run the table if they had him. There is such a big difference between their quarterbacks and him. Is he worth two more touchdowns against Cincinnati?
I'm just sitting here thinking, no. I mean, it was 24-13. I would have to go back. They fumbled a kickoff that Cincinnati had no problem scoring. But I think they also had a bad interception that Cincinnati.
Right. Yeah.
And so if Djokovic doesn't make that mistake.
Right.
Right. And put on the brakes. Don't want to talk about Notre Dame right now. We'll get them Wednesday.
Well, going back to the Atlantic, Wake Forest is at the top. And going into probably the last 7-8 seasons, the question has been, who can beat Clemson? Now it seems to be, can Clemson find its way back to the top? It's going to come down to that November 20th game when Wake Forest plays Clemson.
How about that?
But if Wake wins that game, it looks hard to see if anybody catching them, especially not Clemson, if they have two losses in the ACC.
You know, what's going to be interesting is like if NC State, Wake, and Clemson all end up with one loss. I mean, that's possible, right?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I think it's unfortunate for Wake that they get Clemson so late because Clemson is still a very talented football team and they'll have the entire year to improve. And I assume they will improve. And I agree with Dabo that they're close, but they've been close for several weeks, right? So at what point do you make that jump? Do you make it until the offseason? I don't know. I think if I were Wake Forest, I would rather play them when Wake plays NC State, right? As opposed to waiting all the way at the end of the season to play in Clemson. That's my take.
Yeah, so
I think Wake Forest – I think it could possibly be that, like, Wake Forest – beats NC State, but loses to Clemson. Because Clemson will be an improved football team by November 20th when they play. Or improved offense.
Well, looking at their schedule.
You're looking at Wake's schedule?
Yes, it looks like the next three games are very winnable. Syracuse on the road.
Certainly.
You should be able to win that one. Army on the road. Maybe a little bit tougher, but you should win that one. Duke at home, that seems like a win for Wake Forest. But then those last four games, all in a row, at UNC, at home against NC State, at Clemson, at Boston College.
I don't think they're going to make it.
That's a gauntlet to end the season.
Yeah,
that's
it's similar to what Virginia Tech faces at the end, where three of the last four games are on the road. Except their home game's tougher. They got NC State and Tech has Duke.
Yeah.
So everybody loves Wake Forest right now, but just
they'll split those games and go 10-2.
But wow. It is conceivable to think if Wake Forest does go on a run, maybe loses to Clemson, beats NC State. If NC State wins the rest of their games, you could have three one-loss teams in the Atlantic.
NC State just doesn't seem like consistent enough to me.
Agreed.
They did not play well against Louisiana Tech this past weekend. Yeah. That game was tied at halftime, I think, wasn't it? And Clemson, I mean, we can sit here and say all day that, yeah, they're talented, so they're probably going to improve at some point, and they probably will, but at the same time, we keep saying that, and they haven't really done it yet. Their running game improved against Boston College, but on the whole, they're just not clicking as an offense. And when you can't score 20 points every time you play, you could lose to anybody.
And that NC State loss really got rid of the room for error that they had. Now it seems like if they lose one more,
so by the way, Clemson's got to travel to Pitt on October 23rd.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and Pitt's going to be able to score.
Yes.
Pitt looked very good against Georgia Tech this past weekend.
Yes. So here's a little piece of knowledge. I don't know if we're ready to transition talking about the Coastal yet, but PFF rankings, Kenny Pickett is the number two ranked quarterback in the country.
Yep.
19 touchdowns, one interception. He's had three straight games with four touchdowns, at least four touchdowns.
And a 92.7 passing.
Yeah, he has thrown 15 touchdown passes in the last three games, which I believe ties the record set by whom? The school record set by whom?
Dan Marino,
who was kind of good.
Yeah.
He was okay.
I remember the first time Kenny Pickett played, or at least the first time I remember him playing, was in the
2017.
I think second half of the second game.
That they pulled their starter. Yep.
He was a young guy.
I was in middle school at that point.
But I remember Pickett come. We've talked about this before. Pickett came into the game, and I remember looking at him thinking, "Man, that guy's pretty good."
Yeah, he was an athletic guy who could run. Yeah. The passing game has come slowly to him, but he has steadily improved throughout the course of his career.
And now, 12 years later, he's got enough experience under his belt.
Shall we get right into it?
Well, I think we're going to jump into the coastal. We're going to take a break and jump into the coastal after that. We'll also talk about the men's and women's soccer team later on. First, let's throw it over to Nick Brown. He's got some news with Virginia Tech scheduling, maybe some trivia, some notes.
Yeah, Pitt game was announced 3:30 on either ESPN, ESPN2, or the ACC network. I think that's all depending on whether Tech wins, Pitt wins, both teams lose, all that jazz. So 3:30 kickoff for homecoming.
And who's Pitt play this week? Any idea? You don't have to look. We'll look it up during the break. It's fine.
But yeah, so I guess it just depends on who loses that week. And then David Cunningham's given all the press conference news stats and all that. He's talking about Notre Dame. Talk about that. I wanted to talk about, for the question, Notre Dame's ranked 14th with their loss to Cincinnati. Virginia Tech is 3-4 versus AP number 14 teams in the country dating back to 1973. Who was the last team ranked number 14 to lose to Virginia Tech?
Number 14 to lose to Virginia Tech.
I will give it's in this past
narrow
decade.
Narrow it down, yeah.
Last decade. It was in this last decade.
I'm going to randomly guess UNC.
I would say Miami.
Miami would be my guess.
It is Miami. 2013, Trey Edmonds had four touchdowns. Four touchdowns.
Wow. Yeah, that God, Tech
that was
went
a beat
off.
Down.
Tech went off that night offensively.
Yeah, they did.
Inexplicably came out of nowhere and just like everything on offense clicked that night. And
oh, it's explicable. It was against Miami.
That's true.
42-24.
Because then Tech came back at home and lost on senior day to Maryland the next week.
Oh, gosh, that game was painful.
You weren't there.
No,
you weren't there because I know because that was I've covered two games in my life from the press box and that was one of them.
I wonder what I was doing, but I do remember for some reason I took the game broadcast from that and I did that whole condensed game thing where I cut out all the commercials and all the talk. I don't know why I did that for the 2013 Maryland game, but so I got to watch that game afterwards in excruciating detail. Mm.
Yeah, so that's the last time. Logan Thomas had two pass touchdowns over 300 yards on that game.
You remember Josh Stanford had a big broken tackle on the pass play?
Wow.
Trey Edmonds had a pass play where he just broke like three guys' tackles. And like, that was when he was really starting to come on. Remember, he went off to start the season against Alabama and had two 100-yard games like in his first three games. Yeah. And then he got hurt. Because he was the only running back that could play because they had foolishly played J.C. Coleman against Western Carolina when they shut in on two sprained ankles. So Trey had to carry the load. And
what was Trey's injury? I don't remember.
I don't remember what the early injury was. But he was just getting back from that early injury and starting to get into a groove later in the season. Big game against Miami. Had a good game against Maryland, too. And then he was absolutely torching UVA the next week when he broke his leg.
Right, and that was right. Yeah. He was off to a really good start against UVA. Yeah.
We got anything else, Nick?
That's it for right now. I want to save all the Notre Dame Fuente comments for Wednesday when you guys really dive into Notre Dame.
Yeah,
makes sense. We'll do a full Notre Dame preview on Wednesday as the Hokies face off with the Fighting Irish, 7:30 from Lane Stadium on Saturday. We're going to take a break here on episode 196 of the Tech Sideline podcast. When we come back, we're going to dive into the Coastal. Virginia Tech seems to be in the driver's seat along with the Pittsburgh Panthers like we talked about. So that game coming up in less than 2 weeks, going to be huge from Blacksburg. We'll also look at the men's and women's soccer programs, which are both nationally ranked and looking good through the middle part of their season. Make sure you stay with us here on episode 196 of the Tech Sideline podcast. We'll be right back. We welcome you back to episode 196 of the Tech Sideline podcast, brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. I'm Jake Lyman, your host. We got the full crew on set. Will Stewart, Chris Coleman, Nick Brown in our fourth chair, and Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes. We are doing a deep dive right now on the ACC landscape and where everything sits as we enter October. A lot of big games coming up over the next couple of weeks. We already went through the Atlantic with Wake Forest leading the way there, and now it's time to dive into the Coastal, where right now Virginia Tech and Pitt currently tied at the top with one win apiece in conference play, 1-0. And it seems like those two teams, that game on October 16th in Lane Stadium is going to be huge, as right now North Carolina, Virginia, Georgia Tech all have two losses, and then Duke and Miami 0-1.
Yeah. I think that Pitt can this is going to sound like a strange comment, but I think that Pitt can lose that game and still win the Coastal. I think if Virginia Tech loses to Pitt, they're in big trouble.
Yes.
As far as winning the Coastal.
Because then you would need Pitt to lose twice, at least.
And you're Virginia Tech, and you've got that stretch at the end we talked about, which is pretty tough. So that's my take on that. By the way,
you don't want to drop a home game.
No. And we looked, and Pitt has a bye week. Pitt doesn't play again until they play at Virginia Tech.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So Pitt, to me, is certainly right now. Like, if I had to place a bet on who's going to win the Coastal right now,
I'd bet Pitt.
Because this quarterback they have is, like you said, number two in the country in overall PFF rating.
You got to shave those gray hairs off his beard before he plays.
Yeah. He's like a regular Chris Winkie out there.
Yeah. And he's such a rarity. Four or five years at the same school.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's
it does pay off.
It does pay off, if people are developed properly. So.
Well, and he's also had the same head coach the whole time, the same program culture.
Right,
you know.
Right.
Well, now he's being looked at as an NFL prospect, too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was a little bit surprised that he came back this year, because I think he would have been drafted after last year, too. Pitt, I think right now, based on all the evidence that we have, I would say Pitt, Wake Forest, NC State, to me, are the three best teams in the ACC, and you could put those in whatever order you wanted to put them in. A conference would never admit to this, but like, you got to be really thinking that the ACC brass is like, oh, please Virginia Tech beat Pitt. And, oh, somebody please beat Wake Forest, because we cannot have Wake Forest, Pitt, and Charlotte.
NC State and Tech would be awesome.
That'd be great. Yeah. There's just not enough compelling. I mean, if I'm Jim Phillips, I'm really concerned right now, because I read an article recently, and I should have researched this before I came on the air, but where basically the Miami president told the Miami athletic director, you're on your own. We're not funding you anymore. So the school president, nobody goes to games in Miami.
Yeah.
They have some rich alumni, but I'm not exactly sure how much they care about donating money.
So let's pump the brakes for a second. And for people who don't know how funding of college athletics works, what does that mean? Because college athletic departments, they run independently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, universities can put money into an athletic department.
Right.
Yes. And I wish we had Gio here because I could ask him, well, I don't know if he would know this sort of thing, but Syracuse has done that. They've put money into their athletic department.
Rutgers has done that.
Man, I remember way back in the day looking at when I first started looking at financial information for college athletic departments. One year, when I was researching Syracuse, they had something like $5 million worth of revenue into their women's basketball program. Mm-hmm. Where everybody else is like $500,000. And I thought, what in the world is that? And somebody explained it to me. That's when the university put money in the athletic department, that's probably where they slotted it.
Right. So they counted that as revenue for
right.
some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
because all these books can be cooked differently. But
so when a university president in a place like Miami says that, that's probably what he's saying. We're not transferring any funds over.
Well, what that tells me is. Miami is a private school, so they don't report their money
That's
situation.
Right. Yeah.
What that tells me is that their university has probably been
propping them up
for a while.
Well, their football attendance is terrible.
And I bet the school president looks at it and looks at the fact that nobody goes to the games and said, you know what? If our fan base doesn't care about football, then why should I take this university money and put it into something that the fans don't care about?
That is ominous.
So, Miami was the crown jewel of ACC expansion.
They were.
I mean, they were supposed to be.
That's all the ACC cared about. They could bring anybody else.
Syracuse, Boston College, Virginia Tech, whoever. As long as we get Miami, yeah. That's what we want.
Yeah.
And I think everybody looked at the ACC and said, okay. You got Virginia Tech and Miami on one side, and you've got Clemson. And Florida State on the other side. And those are your top four teams.
Yeah.
And now I don't want to use the phrase de-emphasized football, but that kind of to me it's what that's how I read that article.
Yeah.
Is that the football program is not a priority to the university anymore. So if you need more resources for football, find it in other ways. Either increase donations, cut funding for other sports, whatever, but it's not coming from the university side of things anymore. And that's that for a program that, quite to be honest, hasn't been that great since ACC expansion anyway. That's pretty ominous, like you said. And I'd be concerned if I'm Jim Phillips and I'm trying to negotiate Comcast into the ACC network. And I don't know how much people, you know, TV execs think about stuff like that, but like, what kind of product are you selling right now?
It's pretty scary looking. What most people don't know or don't remember looking at the current landscape of college athletics is the ACC back when it expanded was distributing more money per team per school than any conference. Mm-hmm. They were distributing it. If I remember the numbers correctly, it was high 20 millions, low 30s, 30 millions. You know and. Then the SEC network got launched, Big Ten network got launched, right. ESPN really got behind those two conferences. Some things just kind of started to take root, and now they're fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
And so...
And the gulf between first and second and everybody else is just...
Is enormous. And so when the ACC expanded and did that, it was just... I remember being really excited to be in that conference. Mm-hmm. Now, there were some warning signs, like when they put the championship game down in Jacksonville or Tampa or whatever it was, you know. And I think we kind of knew that John Swofford didn't really know how to run a football conference. But at the time that it expanded and went to 11 teams and then 12 in 2004 and 2005, the future was really bright. And it just doesn't – we're getting way off topic here, but it's kind of scary right now.
Yeah, it kind of is. And obviously – Clemson being awesome and making the playoffs every year props everything up to a certain extent. Well, it's not happening this year.
Well, so by the way, folks, we forgot to say this. There are two ranked teams in the ACC right now. Yep. Wake Forest is number 19 and NC State's number 23, and that's it.
And it's absolutely fine for NC State to be the 23rd ranked team
in the
country.
That's
a big state school. The population of the Raleigh-Durham area has basically doubled over the last 20 years. So NC State should be a strong program, in my opinion. They're an in-state school, and there's a lot of talent in that area. and the demographics favor them with the increase of population over the last couple of decades. They favor NC State big time.
Yeah.
And UNC to a certain extent, because they're right there too. So I have no issue at all with North Carolina State being 23rd in the country, but they should be the fourth highest ranked team in the ACC or something like that instead of the second highest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Behind Wake.
No, I mean, right. And we were talking about the top four schools in the ACC during expansion, you know, of Miami, Virginia Tech on one side, and Clemson and Florida State on the other. And those four teams are not ranked right now. Right. They're not ranked in the top 25. Clemson looked so bad in a loss, or excuse me, in a win, that they got dropped out of the top 25, right?
Wow.
Well, and we mentioned it, the PFF overall rankings, three of those four teams are the worst three PFF graded teams in the conference. Clemson, Florida State, Miami, and then right. Virginia Tech, middle of the pack at number 8.
And you know, you throw Louisville in here too. They're 10th out of 14.
Wow.
And they should be better than they are. You know, you go up and down this list, you know, Boston College is first, Pitt's second, Wake Forest fourth, Syracuse fifth.
And these are PFF
Duke
grades.
Duke seventh.
Overall right. team PFF grades, by the way.
So four of the top five schools on this list don't recruit well, right?
Yeah.
So it's just more. It's so much more about culture and player development than anything else, in my opinion.
Well, looking back at the Coastal standings right now, Duke 0-1, but the way that Duke has played, we've kind of talked about this. We don't think Duke will be a factor in the Coastal.
No. Didn't they play like – I think they played like North Carolina Central.
Yeah.
Now, there are certain FCS teams you can play that are underfunded FCS teams that are more like Division II teams that you can play to pad your stats. They'll pad your grading to a certain extent. Miami did that with Central Connecticut State, and the fact that Miami's still dead last after playing Central Connecticut State. All right, now there's a big difference between North Carolina Central, Central Connecticut State, and Richmond.
Yes.
Big, big difference in talent and program funding and things like that. So I think Duke's stats are padded to a certain extent because of that. But I
they also played Kansas.
Oh, and they played Kansas. Yeah, that helps.
And you know, they beat Northwestern as well. Something's off about Northwestern. Somebody smoked them this
Nebraska.
Past.
Nebraska.
Northwestern had five turnovers in that game.
Yeah, so Northwestern.
And Duke still only beat them by seven.
Yes. Well, and Duke lost 38-7 to North Carolina mm-hmm. this week, so didn't look good in their first ACC game. We mentioned Miami at the beginning of the show, lost on that missed field goal on Thursday night against Virginia.
Well, it's the middle is so tight here. If you look, just look at the pure overall grades, like Carolina's sixth with an 84.8, and Georgia Tech is 10th. Georgia Tech and Louisville are tied for 10th with an
81.3.
My dyslexia is getting
But then
today.
Clemson but, 4 points lower than Georgia
right.
Tech.
I know. But you know, it's like six teams in here within 3 points of each other.
Yes.
So there's still a lot of football.
So hopefully you're able to follow because we're kind of going back and forth between where they are in the standings and where they are in
we
the
We read
PFF
too much
grades.
On here that people can't see.
Yes.
Yeah.
We really need to turn this into a like flat out TV show and start putting graphics.
Have graphics up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
We're working towards it.
Well, in the middle of the Coastal standings, North Carolina, Virginia, Georgia Tech all have 2 losses. That's going to be really tough for any of those teams
so
to
North
dig
Carolina,
out of that
Virginia,
hole.
North Carolina, Virginia, and Georgia Tech all have 2 losses.
All have 2 losses.
That's a big deal.
It is. And North Carolina has already played 4 conference games, so they're kind of running out of time to
they
work
still
got to
play
back.
Pitt. They still got to play Wake Forest. Right?
And yeah. Still the Wake Forest game, no longer a conference game. We talked about that.
All right, so they still got to play Pitt, and they still got to play NC State.
Yes.
So their chances are really slim.
Yes, with
and,
2
and
losses.
I don't think Georgia Tech can maintain any level of excellence. That
well, they're 1-2.
Georgia Tech had the one big win against North Carolina, but did not look good against Pitt this weekend, right. Gave up 52 points, right. 42 in the first half.
You know, Virginia kept their heads above water, but they've lost 2.
They're a chip shot field goal being missed from being 0-3
in
the conference.
Like, it's just the likelihood of them winning out.
They appear to be
so
a
far.
Quarterback, and that's about it. Because we're talking about PFF ratings, and Kenny Pickett's number 2 in the country. Well, Brennan Armstrong is currently the Number four graded quarterback right. in the entire country.
So they have a quarterback. I like a couple of their individual players on defense, but overall their defense isn't good. Just don't think they have much team speed, as is usual the case
right.
at UVA. But, you know, I mean, and Miami's 0-1, and you honestly expect Miami to win 7 straight games.
Nope.
No. So I mean, this is coming.
It's Pitt and Virginia Tech.
Virginia Tech is kind of the point I'm trying to make. Yes.
Yeah. So that game on October 16th. That might decide it. When it comes down to the end, that could be the deciding factor. It would certainly put Virginia Tech in a very good position with tiebreakers over both UNC and Pitt.
Yeah.
Well, and I think there's a lot of excitement towards this Notre Dame game. A win against Notre Dame at home in prime time. Everybody's excited for the possibility of that. But I think people need to realize that you should probably rather trade a win against Pitt than a win against Notre Dame.
Yes.
But yes, from a conference rank standpoint, from a perception standpoint.
Exactly.
Now, the problem is if it'll look bad if Virginia Tech beats Notre Dame and loses to Pitt, just because of the names of the schools, right? But, like, Pitt is better than Notre Dame, in my opinion. Yeah. I haven't 100% decided, but right now I'm probably picking Tech to beat Notre Dame. And then I'll probably pick them to lose to Pitt, not because I think, oh, that's just Virginia Tech, they're going to play down to their competition. No, it's because I think Pitt is better than Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Well, Pitt this season has put up 262 points in 5 games. That can't be right.
Is that right?
I mean, that's what's printed on.
No, they put up like 70 or something against New Hampshire.
So 262 points, the next closest team overall, and this is including non-conference games, 192, and that's Wake. So 70 points up. This is a team with a really good offense that
really good
the
offense.
Hokies are going to have trouble keeping up with. Notre Dame, not so much. You look at a lot of their games. I mean, they scored, I want to say, 13 points against Cincinnati this week.
Mm-hmm.
And then the week before, they were down 13-10 to Wisconsin before getting a kick
before
return
Wisconsin
touchdown.
Kind of gave everything away.
A kick return
to
touchdown,
them.
Two pick sixes.
I think they outgained like 131-50 in the fourth quarter, but scored 31 points in the fourth quarter off of turnovers. And their offense struggled early in the season. I mean, they've just – every game has been a grind for them. They've had to struggle with everything. And that's the same with Virginia Tech to a certain extent. The thing about Virginia Tech is, like, one week – you score 21 on the road against West Virginia, which, as it turns out, is a pretty darn good defense that can shut Oklahoma down away from Morgantown, you know? And then, so Virginia Tech can actually do a decent job against a top defense like West Virginia, with the exception of the red zone, of course. And then the next week, they can't score against an FCS team, right? That actually, in a way, makes me feel better. Because they've actually played better against the best competition they faced this year than they have against the lowest competition.
So let's get into that a little bit. I'm looking at West Virginia. They gave up 30 to Maryland. They gave up 21 to Virginia Tech, 16 to Oklahoma, and 23 to Texas Tech.
Right.
So
the Maryland game is an anomaly. Breaking
Lots
in a new coach on the defensive side
of
the ball.
I want to get back to the whole perception thing, Notre Dame versus Pittsburgh. One of the things that struck me was it's generally accepted as truth that was Cincinnati's biggest win ever. I don't know my Cincinnati football history.
At Lane Stadium, 1995. Well, that'll end up being...
That's an impressive win in retrospect.
Well, it's a much better team than the one they beat on Saturday, in my opinion.
So that people are saying that about Cincinnati's win over Notre Dame, and the only reason they're saying that is because it was a road win over the number 9 team, which isn't the number 9 team. And they're also not number 14 either. And the fact that it's a critical moment in Cincinnati's history. So they go from being number 8 or 9 or whatever they were up to number 5. So that's why it's big. As far as quality of opponent, And I think that the national narrative about Notre Dame is starting to be, oh, they're not that great, and they are really struggling on offense.
And they turn the ball over, and they give up a ton of sacks.
And the other thing is, this game's on the ACC network. It's not like anybody's going to be watching it.
So you have Comcast, yes. You're certainly not going to be.
You know, so that game, I don't know, 500,000 people are going to watch that game, maybe? Maybe 1 million tops?
Does the ACC network release their numbers?
No, you're never going to. Unless it's some huge number, in which case ESPN will tell you about
right.
the highest rated game ever on the ACC network. Right. You may hear that. And I do get the PR emails from ESPN where they brag about their ratings. Yep. But it's always where they're telling you some Big Ten team or SEC team or some combination has gotten between 4 and 8 million viewers for a show. They love to brag about that stuff, but they're unlikely to brag about an ACC network game that gets maybe 1 million viewers.
Well, and just looking at these next two matchups, it seems like Notre Dame is just a much better matchup for Virginia Tech and not a high-powered offense.
I agree with that. Now, I also don't think Pitt will roll into Lane Stadium and score 40-some points like they've been doing to everybody else. Tech has a much better defense than the teams they've faced so far.
The biggest problem, challenge, one of the biggest challenges with Pitt is that you really have to stay disciplined. Kenny Pickett's really good about breaking the pocket and keeping his eyes downfield and throwing darts. You know, that's the biggest challenge that they face. So but Tech's got some good cover corners, so we'll see.
Well, these are going to be two big games for Virginia Tech, back-to-back weekends in Lane Stadium. We're going to have a full Notre Dame preview on Wednesday on the podcast, and then next week obviously Pitt week. Before we get into YouTube questions, quickly, I want to hit on the two soccer programs for Virginia Tech because we haven't given them, we haven't talked about them at all this season, but both of them are quietly making a run. Men's soccer ranked 11th in the country this week, women's soccer 19th in the country. Men's soccer earlier this season beating the number one team in the country, defending national champions Marshall. Women's soccer ties against Duke and UNC, both wins games they could have won. So, maybe a possible run in the postseason for both of these programs in 2021.
And the men's team beat UVA, too.
They did. They haven't lost since September 11th.
I think it's interesting that you look at the men's program and see that they lost the number one pick in the MLS Super Draft this past winter. And they're still able to be a, you know, probably – but they'll be top 10 some point this year. You know, certainly in the RPI, I'm sure.
I believe after beating Marshall, they might have been top five.
Yeah. I think that just shows that the program itself is really strong. This program has depth, and it's been built up over time. Their facilities are good. It's fun to go to a game in Thompson.
Crowds are big.
Yeah, the crowds are big. The setting is really nice. I think McComas. Is the background,
yes.
And then the sun sets over McComas. It's really beautiful, and so I think they have a lot going for both their programs right now. They both look like, you know, NCAA tournament teams for sure, and you know, you never know, you get the right matchups, you can make a run.
So for those, sorry to interrupt, but people that don't follow soccer, and I don't follow it closely, so this would have been my thought. Oh, yeah, but if I pull up Tech's 11th, but if I pull up the rankings, I'll see five ACC teams ahead of them. That's not accurate. So looking at the rankings, Duke is ranked fourth. Marshall's still fifth, by the way, even with the loss to Virginia Tech. And Virginia Tech is the second highest ranked ACC team at 11th. And continuing to scroll down, you see Louisville 14, Pitt 16.
But if you looked at the RPI, then you'd see five ACC teams.
Yes, because those strength of schedules that they play are just ridiculous every single year.
So I know it's a ranking thing versus an actual quality of team thing.
Yeah, right.
Well, Mike Brizendine has just done a great job with that program. I mean, you mentioned Danny Pereira, number one overall pick in the Super Draft. Christo Strickler, another draft pick.
Yeah, both of those guys. There were two draft picks last year.
They both leave, and this team is still a top 10 team, beating the number one team in the country. He has a lot of depth coming in over and over.
Yeah, there's certainly like the program itself gets stronger on a year by year basis. I think it's such a shame that, like, because of COVID, it's almost like Pereira wasn't even here.
It's true.
It would have been like if COVID had hit during the Michael Vick era,
the Khalil Herbert effect.
Right, right.
Did he really play for Tech?
Right.
I saw him on television.
I think I saw him on television one time. Mm. Yeah. But imagine if like COVID had hit with Michael Vick and he would have played here for like 1 year or something like that and then declared for the draft. And you're like, oh, that was fun. We barely got to know you. Or you could do it with Caleb Farley. Like Virginia Tech, you got the real Caleb Farley for 10 games at Virginia Tech. Yeah. And that's it.
So the Michael Vick thing, you know, I don't know if your average Tech fan thinks about this sort of thing, but he was a thing here for 16 months. That was it.
That's it.
Yeah.
He played against JMU and then 16 months later he declared for the draft and was gone. And the ripple effects 20 years later, 20, 21, 22 years later. But he was here. He was a thing for 16 months. That was it.
And Danny Pereira, again, maybe one of the most talented athletes to come through Virginia Tech in the last couple of decades. But yeah. It almost seemed like it snuck up on people that he was the number one overall pick. It was like, oh, he was on the team.
Oh, we had somebody that good?
Well, looking at the women's program, they've got a pretty talented player as well. Emily Gray, she has 9 goals this season. And the woman
in already, she's normally assist. Didn't she lead the country in assists?
She led the conference in assists. I'm not sure about the country, but she has 9 goals, 4 assists. And the women's soccer team went over a ranked South Carolina team, beat NC State at home, and then ties against UNC and Duke. But against UNC, they led 2-0 with 8 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
And Carolina scored 2 late goals. But that's a team that they continue to play good competition and at least hold their own.
Well, yeah, they show they can go toe-to-toe with anybody on a week-to-week basis. And that's another program that's grown steadily through the years. For programs like that, like, you know, your schedule is going to be difficult all the way through. And then you're going to get to the NCAA tournament, and it's going to be about matchups and luck, to be honest with you. That's kind of, you know, there's always a luck factor to soccer. You can go out there and completely dominate a game, possession, shots, everything.
And lose 1-0.
Right, exactly.
I remember when the women made the Final Four. Do you remember how long ago that was?
Oh, I don't remember how long ago it was. 5 or 6 years ago, maybe. 6, 7, maybe.
I believe they played Florida
State. They lost to
Florida State.
And Tech hit the crossbar?
Well, they hit the crossbar twice, I think. Florida State also hit the crossbar once, and theirs kind of glanced down and went in.
And went in.
And ours bounced off and went up.
And that is
And
soccer.
That was the difference in Virginia Tech playing for a national championship. Yep.
So doing the whole ranking thing, it is that way over on the women's side. Florida State's number one in the country. They are 10-0. And they're getting 33 out of 34 votes to be number one. So it goes Florida State number one, Virginia number two, Duke number four, North Carolina number five. So
yeah,
so that's what you're looking at over on the women's side.
Well, women's soccer on the road this weekend, matchups with Clemson and Wake Forest. Next home game is October 15th, right before the Pitt game against number one Florida State. So if you're in town for the Pitt game.
Is that the night before?
It is the night before, so that would be a good one to go to. And then this Friday, men's soccer against number 14 Louisville. So top 15 matchup at Thompson Field this weekend as well.
Of course, the Braves are in the playoffs.
Oh, very cool.
So both soccer programs playing.
I'm saying that would be a perfect one to go to.
It would be.
But
yeah, Louisville good as well, and men's soccer, again, has not lost since September 11th, so almost a month.
Wow.
So the men are playing Friday night?
Friday night against number 14 Louisville at Thompson Field.
And then the women are the following Friday night?
Yes, women on the road, Clemson and Wake Forest on Friday and Sunday this weekend, and then their next home game is next Friday, October 15th, number one Florida State comes to Blacksburg.
So how do they do getting into the soccer game? Is it free? I mean,
yeah.
It's free for students, I believe.
No, it's free for everybody.
It's free for everybody? Okay. Yep.
What happens if too many people show up?
It should not be. Look, if I had to pay to get in to watch my high school baseball team in high school, then it should cost $5 to get into a Virginia Tech soccer game. That's a high-quality product. It costs a lot of money to maintain, quite frankly.
Yes. Yes.
So, well, if you hype up, you know, Friday night before Notre Dame, come see the men play number 14 Louisville, and then next weekend before the Pittsburgh game, come see the women play number one Florida State. If you push that and too many people show up, maybe the reaction of the athletic department will be to issue tickets, charge, and start controlling attendance.
Well, and it does seem like the crowd has been bigger this year, people just wanting to watch live sports after COVID. And
the UVA crowd was very impressive.
Yes.
And when they fill up the stands completely, they fill around McComas also outside the fence.
You see people standing outside the fence. That's right, because the winning goal against was that Virginia, I think, but it was late in the second overtime.
Yeah.
It was interesting, the camera angle they had showing the ball going into the goal, and there were people behind the fence, and they started freaking out and climbing the fence and running onto the field.
Well,
that was very
soccer
cool.
Crowds will only increase at Virginia Tech through time because of the international nature of the sport and Virginia Tech being more international.
Yeah.
I was talking to this kid the other night, and he's a Korean kid, and he's lived in America for like 8 years. His favorite team is Tottenham because the best Asian player in general plays for Tottenham.
Yeah.
You know? So this is a guy who's at Virginia Tech, loves soccer, cares nothing about football. He's just more likely to go to a soccer game than anything else. And I'm not saying soccer is going to surpass football at Virginia Tech or anything like that. But it is a sport with maybe the most growth potential at Virginia Tech.
Well, and especially you mentioned the luck factor of the soccer, of just playing soccer, that maybe one of these teams is the closest to getting to that first team national championship.
Yes. Well, I would probably agree with that. Marshall won it last year.
Yes.
And Marshall's good. Marshall's good, but you have to be good and have the luck factor. You have to be good year after year.
Yes.
And a few of those years, you'll
eventually
have
get a few bounces correct. Going your way.
Yeah.
Well, the narrative that soccer is a growth sport's been around for at least 20 years, you know, but I'm actually seeing the attendance now.
Right.
You know, when I see the games on television, I see the highlights, you do see.
Well, it's always been a growth sport in certain parts of the country. It just hasn't been at Virginia Tech.
Yeah. Okay.
Or in this area of the country, per se.
Mm-hmm. Well, the crowds have been good, and you've always got the shirtless men in the front row as well, cheering on both
the women's.
Why do you say that? Are you one of them?
No. So I called the NC State Tech women's game 2 weeks ago, and NC State's head coach in our call, he specifically pointed them out. He said that we scheduled a scrimmage against West Virginia in the preseason just to get ready for Blacksburg because it's a rowdy environment and you've got the
really?
Shirtless guys in the front row.
Man, so I
got
to go.
They heckle
today.
Hard, too.
West Virginia and Virginia Tech, cut from the same cloth, right?
That's how they prepare for Blacksburg, by
by going
West
to West Virginia.
Virginia.
Well, no. Their Virginia Tech fans cringing.
They played West Virginia at Thompson Field. So they scrimmaged at Thompson Field in August.
Okay.
So that was what he wanted to get them accustomed to playing at Thompson Field and all of that.
Okay.
So,
okay.
All right. Well, I think it's a good time to get into our YouTube questions. Nick, any good ones in the chat today?
Yeah. First, a stat by Mr. Scott Glessner. He had a big one last week as well. The weird stat of the day from Mr. Glessner is Virginia Tech's opening drives. Football has ended in a score. Virginia Tech is 16-6, 9-4 if it's a touchdown. But if they turn it over on that opening drive, they are 6-1 and have won the last six games.
And there's no football coach ever made who would say, you know what, it's better to turn that ball over.
Yeah, let's even go out there throwing interceptions.
Should we just have Braxton do an arm punch on the first play of the game?
So if we fumble or throw a pick on the first drive, I'll remember that.
Yes!
You'll see one guy in section 33 going, yeah, we're going to win now.
Make it 7-0. That's a good one.
Anyways, best question I found today, Benjamin, I hope I'm saying this last name right, Aigner, regardless of whether Fuente stays, significant changes will be needed. Recruiting-wise, what would a Mike Jones hire be like for Virginia Tech?
Oh, boy. Lauren
Johnson.
Not even that. Football and basketball recruiting is apples and oranges. There's really only one or two. DeMatha is a national level. These basketball players move around so much nationally, even in high school, that you can't really compare.
IMG.
Yeah, yeah. Football, you've really just got – you got IMG Academy, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Maybe Bishop Gorman.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just so
– And some of the Westerns like De La Salle and places like that, but they're way up.
Yeah, so I don't think there is an equivalent. Because DeMatha gets basketball players. Yes, a lot of them are from the Mid-Atlantic region, but they're not necessarily exclusive to that.
Yeah.
And it's not like Lauren Johnson at Highland Springs. It's not like he's getting all the 757 players and a bunch of Northern Virginia players and all the top players from Richmond and just putting them together in this one super school. What's a regular school?
Yeah.
It's a regular public school. So I honestly don't think there is an equivalent. Like probably. he would maybe be the most equivalent, but at this point, where's he going to coach? I mean, you're going to fire Ryan Smith to put him on the staff. I mean, if you hire Lauren Johnson, he's the DB's coach.
Bishop Sycamore's coach. Is looking
probably the only analog I can think of is Mike Smith at Hampton back in the 90s. A lot of players were transferring into Hampton, but that was from that actual 757 area. It wasn't like it was the entire
It wasn't
state.
A national level school.
Yeah. Right.
That's really the only
good one.
One
that All right. All right, perfect. We're running a little bit long today anyway,
yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that'll do it for episode 196 of the Tech Sideline podcast. It is Notre Dame week, though, and we're going to have a full Notre Dame preview on Wednesday on the podcast. And what's coming up on TechSideline.com, Chris?
I've got Brandon Patterson. Well, he's already written it, and I'll edit it and post it this afternoon. But an article on, you know, we've talked about how, like, Brock Hoffman and Luke Tenuta have struggled despite having so much experience on the offensive line. So he's written a little bit of an article about that, about the offensive line play, and I'll have that posted later today. So that's number one. And then after that, it'll basically be a regular game week.
Great. We got preview then, coming up Wednesday, I assume.
Yep. Yeah, and sorry to disappoint folks, but I think I'm going to skip Monday thoughts today because I haven't spent 1 minute thinking about
it. Because he has no thoughts.
I have no thoughts today. I could sit here and talk about the same stuff we just talked about.
See, I figured you wouldn't write one, and that's why I scheduled Brandon for today.
Sweet. Perfect. I love it when a plan comes together.
Plenty of good content on TechSideline.com. And again, want to mention, student memberships are free right now.
Yes.
So if you are a student at Virginia Tech watching, make sure you jump on that. Get all this great content from the guys here on set, and as well as David Cunningham, who is at the Justin Fuente press conference.
Working right double now. Today, because right after Justin Fuente is basketball. Mike Young and three basketball players.
Yeah, so that's also what's coming up on Tech Sideline this week, is a lot of stuff coming out of those two press conferences.
Yeah, basketball content coming up again November 9th, a little over a month away.
And basketball media, ACC Media Day for basketball is tomorrow.
Wow. So busy yes. week.
And yes. we are sending David to
And David's to that. Going. Unfortunately, Virginia Tech has also scheduled their football players to be interviewed tomorrow while David's going to be in.
Oh, really? I thought they were going to.
Oh, no. Remember, we talked about that last week. We didn't know whether it was going to be Tuesday or Wednesday. Well, guess what? It turned out to be Tuesday.
Well, we may have to figure out somebody to send.
Maybe.
Looking around the
Someone's
room.
Someone's in attendance.
All right, well, that will do it for episode 196 of the Tech Sideline podcast. We looked at the Rodney Rice commitment to Virginia Tech basketball. We also checked on the ACC football landscape, where the Atlantic and Coastal stand, and who is in the driver's seat for that ACC championship in December. Looked at the men's and women's soccer team and how well they've been doing early on. And we'll have a full Notre Dame preview on Wednesday on the Tech Sideline podcast. Want to thank everybody on set. Will Stewart, across the way, founder and general manager of TechSideline.com. You can find him at Will Stewart TSL on Twitter. Chris Coleman, the lead analyst and columnist for Tech Sideline. He is at Chris Coleman TSL on Twitter. Malcolm Stewart always does a great job behind the scenes. And Nick Brown, some great comments. Good trivia again in the fourth chair today. Want to thank him as well. And I'm Jake Lyman, your host. Want to wish you a great start to the week, Hokies fans. We'll see you later on.